Sometimes I'll say, all right, everyone, I'm hiding somewhere. Can you find me? I'll give you some clues. I'm in a place that's very cold, and I'll hide inside a fridge.
What? You're hiding inside a fridge?
I like to start my podcast by asking really obscure questions to impress people with how much research I've done, okay? So here is my really obscure question, Vivian. Are you ready?
Oh, yes.
Okay. How on earth did you get the police force to hire you to do educational skits in schools?
Oh, well, actually, that was through an event company. They asked me to write the script, and then we actually enacted the script, not just in schools, but at the National Library locations as well.
Okay, so the police basically decided they wanted to do some community work. They reached out to an event company, and the event company reached out to you. Hello, this is Big Ben.
Hello.
Now, look, listen, I'll tell you what I've been up to, Vivian. From the 12th of December right through to the 21st of January, I was lucky enough to be working flat out every day doing shows at a carnival in Hong Kong.
Oh.
And then,
wow.
And then I flew to Singapore for a week for Chinese New Year to see my in-laws. But when I got back, the coronavirus had arrived kind of in full force. And since then, I have had almost no work at all. The schools are closed. My kids have been at home. Birthday parties are all cancelled. The streets are pretty empty. Shops and restaurants are closing up or taking temperature checks. I've had two potential bookings since January. Both of which, of course, have cancelled or postponed. So I'm spending my time at home just writing new shows. I spend an hour each day practicing new magic tricks and putting a new show together. And I just wondered, what is your story? What have you been up to? How has it affected you, the coronavirus?
Well, early January, when it first hit China, the first thing I realized was that all the mass-producing countries were stopping exports. And we in Singapore, we don't have any mask factories.
You're talking about the face masks that people wear.
Yeah. So I went over to Batam to, you know, try to sweep up all the masks I could get.
And this wasn't a business idea. You weren't going to sell those masks.
No, I was helping people. Everybody got it at the same price that I got it at. And of course, we will stop spattering.
I'm just laughing at myself. Here we are. I was going to talk about entertainment, and all we're going on about is the coronavirus.
Okay. Then, for entertainment-wise, I was pretty lucky because Geylang Serai,
I saw a daily Facebook video from, it was the Geylang Serai Community Centre.
I was very lucky to get work.
Yeah.
So they commissioned 12 episodes. So the budget wasn't fantastic, but I'm so glad they're doing something for the community of entertainers in Singapore.
So just to tell people who, because I haven't explained this, so you were doing a daily video from the Geylang Serai Community Centre, and you were doing
live Facebook.
Live Facebook. You're doing, and they were like videos, like maybe making a balloon model or something else, something.
And you or teaching children how to, you know, do some craft work, how to grow your own bean sprouts.
Oh, wow.
Then I try to, you know, get children excited about reading. So every day I read an excerpt from a storybook, my favorite storybook, which is The Wishing Chair.
Yeah.
From Annie Blyton. And then I'll tell stories with the children's names in them so, you know, they can identify. And, so every day I do something fun, and Baby Pinky, my sidekick, my puppet, actually comes out to talk to everyone every day as well. And he has this suitcase whirl. So I'll ask him about, oh, what did you see last night? And he will, you know, relate what is actually happening in the suitcase world, because the suitcase world is a world where everything changes every day. So every time he goes in, it's a new world. So sometimes it could be the world of candies. Everything grows on trees, like chocolate tarts on bushes, jelly
I'm
cups,
clapping my hands. I'm clapping
on
my
flowers.
So look, this is great, because this basically means, whereas most entertainers have had zero shows since the coronavirus outbreak many months ago, you've had at least these 12 bookings from the community centre where you're not face-to-face with any people, you're making a video at home or in your studio, and you're posting it online. That's great.
Actually, Geylang Serai set up the whole live Facebook thing. So they had an iPad, they had cameras, they had microphones and all, and we basically had to sanitize everything every time we walk in, take our temperature and all.
Okay, so you weren't actually doing it from home. They let you go to the community center, but they sanitized everything.
Yes, that's right. So that was last week. But this week, because we're on the circuit breaker, which essentially is a partial lockdown, I would say, except for essential services, we're still allowed to go out for our groceries and stuff, but we try to minimize that because I really want this 2 weeks to pass as fast as possible, and hopefully the infections stop, and we can get back to doing what we love and live to do.
Yes, of course. Okay, as I said, this is the second interview I'm doing with you, so thank you very much. Way back on episode 20, I talked all about how you started. We talked about doing birthday parties. We talked about ventriloquism. You had a great tip about not disciplining the kid, not telling a kid off at a birthday party. Telling them they are, telling them, boosting their self-confidence, telling them that they're important, that they're special, that they're doing so well. Maybe they can help police the crowd for you. They can be the person who helps you. Yes. But in this podcast, I thought it'd be nice to talk a lot about your MC work, because it seems to me that it's a bit of a departure from your earlier career as a clown and a children's entertainer. And of course, it is very useful to be able to expand your skill set so that you have potentially more work you can do. So if you're not only a children's clown, but you can also be an MC for adult shows. That's fantastic.
Yes, that's what I have been doing.
But I must ask this. Was it difficult to leave maybe your comfort zone of being a children's clown, a children's entertainer, and moving into emceeing all kinds of shows, especially for adults? Was it difficult?
I would say the transition is like, you know how Edward de Bono has many hats that you wear, green, black, and whatever colors, right? So it's like putting on a different hat, a different mindset, a different skill set.
Yes.
Because as an MC, there are many different types of MCs.
So can I just...
For me, I was doing a lot of sales MCing. So it's very sales-driven, and I try to sell on behalf of the company with nothing but myself.
Sorry,
early bookings were actually quite interesting. I was helping a lingerie company. And they allowed me to wear my clown costume, so I felt very at home.
Ah.
And my clown costume is kind of pretty sweet and feminine, so it kind of like fits into their image as well.
Yes, I've seen the videos.
So
you
I
wear
did that
an
for, I think, 5 or 6
costume.
Or 7 years.
Yeah, you wear it. Seen the videos. You wear an extraordinarily colourful clown costume. It's probably the costume that you used to wear for birthday parties, and the client allowed you to wear it as part of your MC work. So you felt, in a way, you didn't feel
it was
like you were doing
transition.
Something.
Yeah.
You didn't feel like you were doing something totally new. It was you felt you could bring the same character, the same personality that you brought to your children's shows.
And the same, the same charisma, attraction, and everything. But, with older people. And, the other thing is that I grew up as well. So
yeah.
I kind of like, yeah, now I'm 42. Can you imagine?
Whoa.
We met when I was 19.
God, that's a long time. More than 20
yeah.
years. Wow.
Yeah, now we can say 20 years. Oh, my gosh.
Gosh, yes.
Yeah, so that was a transition. And then after that, I started doing, like, dinner and dances as well. Dinner and dances are like playing games with children, except that they are adults. So
right.
I just transition as well.
Yes, I can see that there are links. So first of all, you got the work, promotional work, and you were basically being the same character that you were at children's birthday parties. And then when you got to do MCing as for adults at their corporate dinners, you were able to use some of the tactics that you use for doing children's party games and just basically do it for adults. Is that what you're saying?
Something quite similar, because usually even for dinner and dances, I'll be dressed up in some kind of costume. Yeah, depending on the theme, like masquerade, I'll be in a ball gown with a mask. Then, for example, if I'm doing like around the world, I'll have different costume changes from a Vietnamese costume to, it's easier in some way because I can bring the audience into the theme better. So I'm stronger with theme parties.
Right. Okay.
But I've also done like corporate presentations and more corporate work as well in the MICE industry.
Right, yes, MICE, yes.
Yeah, because I'm pretty good with computers, so it's a very natural progression. So I was able to do like presentations for F5 Network, Microsoft Launch, you know, things like that.
Wow, fantastic. But tell me about maybe any or all of these, maybe your best MC experience ever, or maybe the funniest thing that's ever happened.
Or maybe
the funniest thing.
My best and funniest as well was actually for Cafu.
Oh, Cafu. Yeah. The hypermarket.
They were in Singapore from 1997 until they left, so I was the MC throughout the entire like 12, 13 or 14 years.
Wow.
So I did wine emceeing. I also did their, every October, they would have 1 month of emceeing. So every day we have a different special offer, or I just walk around talking about all the great offers I see in Kapu.
Yeah.
And it was really, really fun because sometimes I'll say, all right, everyone, I'm hiding somewhere. Can you find me? I'll give you some clues. I'm in a place that's very cold and I'll hide inside a fridge or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And whoever finds me gets the prize, you see. So we make it more interesting while people are shopping.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they tend to stay longer. As you stay longer, you browse longer and you buy more stuff. We've also got, you know, got this amazing, you know, wines, how people used to sell wines. They would sell one bottle at a time, right?
Okay.
So there was one time when they said, oh, can you be my wine MC? So I thought to myself, okay, how can I make it different?
Yeah.
So whatever I do, I usually would try to make things or do things differently.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes a bigger impact. It makes the difference.
Yeah.
So I went to the winemakers that were coming, and I realized that there is such a thing called cellaring for wines. And there are certain wines that are suitable for cellaring and certain wines which are suitable for drinking now. So what I did was to get people to buy cases and keep them for as many years as they can, because every year the complexities of the wine will change.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, the target for that night was actually $20,000 worth of sales.
Okay.
We hit $100,000.
Whoa, that's amazing.
Yeah, and after that, their subsequent wine events, they got me to MC, and their target was always 100,000 after that. So we would hit and go over and beyond in 3 hours only.
Wow. That's brilliant. Yeah. That's a really good story. That's a very good story.
So that's a very memorable MC experience. The funniest is probably the one in the freezer.
you're not joking. You actually hid inside a freezer.
Yeah. I was sitting inside waiting for somebody to find me.
Isn't that really dangerous? Can you open them from the inside?
Oh, yes, okay. I can. And it's not switched on.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they are all the display sets. Okay. And there was this huge one that's like walk-in size. That's why I walked in.
Oh, that's brilliant. You don't have to tell me this if you don't want to, but is there any worst experience ever emceeing? I've had quite a lot of nightmare emceeing experiences.
Oh, yes. There was one time. Yeah. It was the very, very worst because there was zero crowd. Zero. There's no one walking around at all. At all. I've never seen a mall so quiet. And there were like 3 staff in the shop, in the whole entire shop. Oh, and they were looking at me and they were like, there's nobody, why do you keep talking?
Yeah.
Then I was like, well, if I don't keep talking, there will really be nobody. So if I keep talking, at least we all have a chance that people will hear me and walk over.
Oh dear, nobody at all.
Nobody. So after talking for half an hour, finally. Oh, and by the way, it took half an hour because they didn't even switch on the sound system loud enough for the people outside further away to hear.
Okay.
So halfway through, about I think around 25 minutes, I went to switch the volume up a lot higher. And then I just spoke for 5 minutes and everyone came into the shop.
Oh, so it was a technical issue, really, in many ways.
Yes. Because they weren't allowed to, you know, make it louder.
Yes.
But I was like, but there's nobody. This is for inside the store people, but there's no one inside the store. So you have to make it louder, face the speakers out. At least we can grab some crowd.
Yeah,
so that was
the one. One of the changes in the industry, because when I was in Singapore in the 1990s, the shopping centres didn't mind having the microphones and the speakers on really, really loud, and we'd have big stage shows.
I
think after about 5 years, the shop said, it's just too noisy. Please be a bit quieter.
Yeah. And after that, it's even worse.
Even worse, oh. Tell me, Vivian, how many languages can you MC in?
Well, I can speak in English. 我也会讲华语. 我懂得说广东话.
Yes, Chinese, Mandarin, yeah.
我发生开带. Thai.
Oh, that's Thai. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Gosh, can you really... have you ever had to MC in Thai?
I actually did a few Thai MC shows. One, it was a dinner and dance in Thai.
Oh, brilliant.
It was in Singapore, but I did it in half English and half Thai. Because they had Thai staff and Thai guests that flew in. So they wanted them to feel more at home.
Well, that's amazing. That really is amazing, because not only can you entertain the kids' parties, not only can you be an MC, but you can also MC in what are, for you, foreign languages. That's brilliant. Wow.
Well, my Cantonese is not that fantastic, so I won't probably be able to do a full show in Hong Kong.
Yeah,
my Chinese, my Mandarin isn't that fantastic, so I won't be able to do a full show in China.
But for Singapore...
But in Singapore, it's fine because you don't have to be completely perfect in each language to draw the crowd.
Yeah.
People are drawn when they hear something unusual.
Mm-hmm. Talking about drawing the crowd, let's just have a quick bit about doing the corporate dinners, because this is what I guess most listeners around the world will be most familiar with for an MC doing... In our line of work, it's where there's a corporate dinner, and they have an MC on stage running the event. How do you draw the? Not, we don't need to draw the crowd; they're sitting down. But how do you warm up the crowd? How do you start the night?
Oh, I try to warm them up by Well, usually I do either one of these games. So it depends on the crowd. For example, if it's like CEOs and all, we try to do more thinking kind of games.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and if the crowd is more blue-collar, then we'll do things like drinking games and scavenger hunt style.
Yeah, yeah.
So it really depends on the crowd. Okay. So we'll do an icebreaker. Well, in the beginning, I'll welcome everyone and get everyone to clap for themselves.
Yes,
for
yes.
being able to attend such a exciting night.
Yes, simple.
Yeah.
Simple but effective. Get everybody clapping for themselves. Yep.
Yes, so, you know, that rouses them and that makes them less shy. And then I'll get them to clap for the MD who will be coming up on stage for his opening address. So,
yeah.
So after the formalities are done, they will have dinner and halfway through I can start doing games and all.
How do you remember key information? Like, say there's a list of titles, or maybe it's something, maybe it's a computer company's dinner and dance, and there's some technical information you have to remember. Or any, how do you remember your lines, basically?
Oh, I basically prefer to memorize rather than hold a piece of paper because it doesn't look professional.
So you just do the hard work.
I also pick up cues from the backdrop.
Yes, that's a good idea.
So if I forget the company name or the guest of honor's name, at least it's on the backdrop, usually.
Yes, usually. Yeah. Good idea. Good tip.
Yeah, and if not, then I'll just hold the program and I would just pretend to tell everybody, oh, and by the way, do you know what's happening later on? Let me tell you more first, you know, before we invite our guest of honor. So we've got like little tactics to make it look more...
Yeah, three good ones, three good techniques, little stuff. But basically, do the hard work and learn it is the best. If you can memorize it and you don't need cards, it looks very good.
Yeah, but if you get like last-minute surprises, I usually get them to write in small cards so that I can hide it in my palm, and it's almost like doing magic where you palm the card.
That's a good idea. That's a very good one. I like that.
You use a name card size instead of those big cards.
Yeah, so it's not obvious that you've even got it. Great.
Yeah. So you're holding it, you're just glancing, and okay, you know what's happening next kind of thing.
Do you have a favorite kind of microphone?
Yeah. I still like headset microphones because it leaves my hands free to do whatever I want to do, gesture or, you know, dance or whatever. But whenever it's not possible, then I would prefer to have a handheld wireless Shure mic.
Yes, that's the brand, huh?
Yeah, and I usually would tune myself before we start because I always sound like Mickey Mouse when other people tune me.
Ah, there you go. Tune yourself, yes.
The problem is most sound engineers, they tune it for guys or male MCs. So they always would have their treble on high.
Oh, that's fascinating.
Yes. So for girls, we sound squeaky and Mickey Mouse or Minnie Mousey. So I usually tune up my mids and my lows and lower the highs.
That's really brilliant. I hadn't thought of that because, of course, I'm a guy. I hadn't realized. Yes.
Huh. Yeah, because it's always tuned for guys, right?
Yeah.
It's like the last setting is probably from an MC with a very low voice. So they will have to, you know, up the treble and lower the bass and lower the mids.
Ah, wow. Are there any other issues that I hadn't thought about between being a female MC and being a male MC? I guess there's quite a lot.
Well, there are quite a lot. There are very few female MCs who are very fun and engaging.
Yes.
Because of the, I would say it's a kind of barrier where the female MC always... Usually it's supposed to look like the pretty vase next to the male MC. But in recent years, it has changed.
Good.
Yeah. I think in the past probably 5 to 8 years, there has been a rise of the female MCs.
Excellent.
And the female MCs are like no longer doing co-MC work, but being the main MC kind of thing.
It's a cultural thing. It's a cultural problem.
Yeah, I think it's a cultural thing because most ladies don't like to look silly, dumb, or ugly. But I'm a clown, so I'm fine with that.
How do you control any music cues when you're on stage?
Music cue. Oh, this is a very interesting topic, actually. I have a lot of clients with very low budgets, which means that I don't get a DJ. I have to tune the system myself and run out to the run and stuff like that.
Oh, right.
So I've been actually doing things like sound effects like ta-da, you know, tang myself.
Just using your
sounds
own
kind
vocals.
Of silly, right?
Yeah,
but that's for low budget stuff. But for clients with budgets, I get a proper DJ and all, and the DJ usually gives me very good sound effects, and he reads my show. So I work with very good DJs who are able to read the situation and play the right music for it.
Yeah.
From fanfares to, you know, audience participation noises, woohoo, and, you know, claps and stuff like that.
Yes,
so it makes the whole atmosphere totally different.
Yes, I agree. People forget that MC isn't actually a one-man job. It's actually really a two-person job. There's some guy also doing all the sound cues. Yes. How do you end the night? Do you have a way of ending the night?
Oh, I tell everyone about how wonderful it is to see all of them there. Then we usually do like one last dance together, or we'll do a photograph together, depending on the company as well, company size and all.
But I
like using songs like YMCA. That one's like my favorite of all time.
Yes.
Because everybody knows that song.
Yes, so you can get the whole crowd doing the silly hand actions.
Yeah, I had some crowd who actually climbed onto the tables, and I was so worried they'd fall down.
Vivian, how do you get, and then how do you deal with a repeat customer for a repeat annual dinner? Do you have to?
I get that a lot.
So
every year it's a different theme. So different costume, different types of games.
Right.
Different everything, yeah.
But it must be hard. I mean, maybe you can do it for a second year. You've still got a whole new set of different games. And then if they've got, like, bring you back for a third year or a fourth year, it must get very difficult.
It's okay. I actually did the same company for 6-7 years.
Wow.
So every year we do a different theme. So for example, we have this Hawaiian night, right? So, you know, one of the games that I will play probably will be, you know, to make your own flower layer. And let's see which table is able to co-create the flower layer together first using just tissue paper, straws, and a string or something like that.
Yes.
So. Yeah, where also, you know, another year it could be, well, something else, like maybe a gambling night or casino night or something like that, right? Then I'll play games like I'll hide all the numbered cards everywhere, and I try to, you know, find a blackjack. So, you know, an ace and a king, queen, or Jack will have to find each other and come to the stage first, you know? So, very different types of games.
Yeah, so if you have a different theme, it is possible just to carry on doing a company's dinner and dance year after year after year. That's amazing.
Yeah, you can, because every year they want a different theme anyway.
Talking about some of
I've done companies where they started off with just 12 people. Can you imagine I'm emceeing a 12-person dinner and dance?
Yeah.
It was done at a restaurant, And then the following year, they had 30 people.
Yeah.
Then the following year, they had 60.
Ah.
And then 150. And now they have grown to like, wow, 400 to 500 people.
Brilliant.
Yeah, so I watch companies grow from year to year, and it's so fascinating. But of course, right now, I think they're
the company
not around
anymore. The coronavirus.
Yeah, well, actually, before the coronavirus, they were hit by the oil and gas industry closures.
Oh. So there's
been because they support these industries.
Yeah. Ah. Oh, well. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen to the world economy if and when the coronavirus peaks and subsides.
Entire industries are hurting, but I'm very glad that we're in Singapore, so the government is trying to do what they can to make sure that our industry can still survive.
Yeah, yeah.
We've got several different types of funding. We also have arts funding. We have independent arts practitioners who are creating funds for people as well.
Oh, that's interesting.
Those who are doing better are actually trying to help those who are doing not as well.
So you've got state-run projects in Singapore, but you've also got community-based projects.
Community-run, yes.
That's fantastic.
In fact, I'm raising funds for the migrant workers in Singapore right now because they are in need of like hand sanitizers, hygiene equipment, stuff like that.
Yes.
So that's what we're trying to do for them right now. It's community driven.
Mm.
Then the other thing is that I realized that our Grab and our private hire vehicle drivers, they are having a huge loss of income.
Yep.
And so right now I'm trying to match businesses and people who are still running essential services with people who can do delivery because they have the license to do so.
It sounds like you're doing good work and keeping yourself busy.
So yeah, they earn, but I don't earn. But I earn in a different way. I earn because it makes me happy. So yeah.
Yep. Yep.
Since I can't perform right now, right?
Yeah.
You know, when we perform, we make people happy. So now that we're not performing, at least we can still make people happy in a different way, and I feel very fulfilled.
Yes, and I think you're right. I think you're right. I'm not making any money at the moment.
Doing the podcast either.
Yes. So, yeah, even if you can't make money financially, you've still got. You don't just sit at home doing nothing at all. That's not good for anybody.
No, you get depressed. Especially for us entertainers, because when we perform, we get so hyped. Endorphins, adrenaline, everything rushes to our heads. And the moment we get off stage, the contrast is so huge.
That's right. Talking about being on stage, what is the game with lots of volunteers on stage untangling a long rope? I saw a video of that on YouTube. And I couldn't see what was going on. It was an annual corporate dinner. It seemed like there were lots of people on stage and there was a rope that they were holding onto and they were trying to untangle it.
That one. I was actually throwing rubber bands out at the crowd and they had to try to create the longest rope they could create. You know, it all starts off with every man for himself, right?
Yeah.
And then halfway through, they realize that if they combine rubber bands with somebody else, their rubber band will be even longer. So eventually, everybody connected, until the whole company had connected their rubber bands together. So, in a way, it's a team-building game that I brought to a dinner and dance because it shows that every part that anyone plays is important in the company.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. So, at the end of it, I actually told everybody, wow, this company has the best teamwork ever. I'm sure all of you will survive, you know, all crisis and everything.
Yeah. Off on a different tangent, how do you store and inflate about 7 or 8 space hoppers? I think this was a game maybe at the Science Center.
Oh, That one. Actually, the space hoppers were there as part of a activity for the children. You know, like a playground corner.
Yeah.
So I thought, hey, let's make a race.
So it was just an opportunity.
And it was so funny.
I was thinking, what a great game. I'd love to do that, but hang on, I can't transport seven space hoppers. And yeah.
Oh, the space hoppers are a flag. Before you blow them up, then you just use your electric pump and just blow it up.
Yeah, it's possible, actually. Yeah, if you could flatten them quickly and store them, put them in a bag, take them to the next show, you could, if you had a special pump just to inflate them again quickly, you could have a massively fun game anywhere. Yeah.
Yeah, that was really fun.
what's your favorite MC game?
Favorite MC game?
Or any one that you enjoy doing.
I like the balloon blowing, actually.
What's that?
Well, I give out balloons to everyone, and they have to try to blow one as big as they can.
Yeah.
So what happens is that everyone will try to blow the biggest balloon they can blow, right?
Yeah.
But then when they look over at somebody else's balloon, it will always look bigger than theirs. So they will always try to refill until it pops.
And they start bursting.
Yeah, so that's a bit funny. So actually, the people who finally win are the people who are content with the size of their balloons.
Yeah, it's interesting. And that is another very portable game. You got a bag of
inflated balloons. Yeah, it's portable and easy.
Yeah, I like it.
Yeah, and I always have balloons in my bag, so...
You don't have to tell me this if you don't want to, but what was the worst game? What was a game? Are there any games that really didn't work? Of course not. You're brilliant.
No, I can't think of any yet.
That's okay.
I'm still thinking. Of just a moment. Was there any games that didn't work?
I had a game that I used to love doing, but doesn't work anymore. I used to have a game in my stage show called the Beach Ball Challenge, where I'd balance my roller bowler on top of my stage box.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
Yeah, on top of a table.
Well, why doesn't it work anymore?
Because the kids became more and more rowdy. And it just, so when I first did it, like 20 plus years ago, they were very well behaved and polite. And then as the years went by, I got louder, the crowd got louder, the kids knew what was going on, and, you know, even if I threw the beach ball out into the crowd to select a volunteer, they'd all just dive on top of the beach ball, and they wouldn't even get on stage. They'd be just jumping on top of each other, total chaos. So that game, I had to retire.
Oh, why?
Just because it's like familiarity breeds contempt, or familiarity breeds rioting in this case. They just went wild.
I'm thinking perhaps it's because the children are so exposed to computer games where they hit each other and do the melee and everything, which didn't happen like 20 over years ago.
Maybe. I should probably just describe the game because people who are listening won't understand it. So I've got a roller bowler, which is a rolling plank on top of a cylinder, which you can stand on and roll around on, but stand on, balance it. And I'd put that on top of my magic box. That's about 2 feet high. Then sometimes I put my magic box on top of a table, so I'd be about 4 feet high, my feet, and so my head would be like 10 feet high. And then children were supposed to throw beach balls at me to try and knock me off.
Knock you off? Yes, I remember that.
And it was really good fun, but yeah, I had to retire it because it just, the kids got too... too rambunctious and too violent.
I heard that, or else you have to find the younger ones and let them do it rather than the older ones who can actually aim.
Well, it wasn't so much that they'd hurt me because they're only throwing beach balls at me, but instead of having 4 people on stage, which is what I'd say, more would just carry on pouring onto stage, and then it would just get dangerous for the kids.
I think there was one game that doesn't work anymore. Because everyone is very into conservation, so anything that you use tissue paper with, I don't think that will work anymore. You know how we used to, you know, get people to see how fast can you wrap a mummy?
Oh, yes, with the toilet rolls.
Tissue paper, yes. So I think right now that would be frowned upon. So yeah, that's probably one game that wouldn't work anymore.
There you go. Now.
Yeah.
Now, Vivian, this is what I'm... One thing I'm really interested in, because I have done a lot of stuff, but this one, this type of activity, I've hardly done it at all. Like emceeing at promotions. So if people don't know what this is, it's almost like you're at a market with a microphone promoting the goods. Is that a good fair description?
Well, it's similar. I can do a short variation. Well, a short example so that your listeners will be able to get a feel of it.
So
for example, if I'm selling like lingerie.
Mm.
Hi everyone, a very, very big warm welcome to One and All, and right here we've got Pierre Cardin lingerie at a super crazy price. Have you ever heard of buy one, get one free? Yes, you have, right? But have you heard of buy one, get two free? Yes, that's happening right now. For just $30, you get three bra and panty sets. Yes, you get a matching underwear as well. Now, that's crazy. You need to buy it for your mommy. You need to buy it for your grandma. You have to buy it for your sister, your best friend. Call everyone right now. What are their sizes? Grab it before it's gone.
Whoa.
So, that's an example.
My goodness. So that's how you get people attention.
So basically I try to find a unique selling point of each product.
Yeah.
And I must also definitely like the product in order to talk about it.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, I've done electronic shows, well, everyone, we've got the power bank right now, and the power bank 10,000 milliampere goes at only $10. I only have 10 sets. How many do you want? Oh, sorry, all sold out. Thank you. Yeah, and then once we get their attention, we sell something else.
Gosh, I think it's just skill. I was going to ask you, how do you get people's attention? How do you make people rush to take the freebies? How do you get people to then buy something? I think it's just skill on your part. You just are relentless. You can just go...
I talk nonstop.
Yeah, talk nonstop. Do you ever
you should hear me for 8 hours. It's like all the people, you know, nearby and all, they're like, how come you can keep talking for so long? You don't even breathe.
How long can you do these sets for?
The longest I did was 8 hours, and that is really tiring. At the end of the set, I'm like, I'm so tired because my feet are aching.
8 hours without a break?
Later on, after like the first couple of months, right, I was like, no, this is too tiring. So I told them, I'll charge you for 7 hours and get a half an hour break every 3 hours or 4 hours.
Oh my God, that's still amazing. Wow.
So I take it as, you know, like training. So for those, I actually charge a lot for because I have to talk nonstop.
Yeah.
And those that I charge less for are the ones that I don't have to talk nonstop.
So you have to explain to the clients, if you get this price, I get breaks. If you don't want me to take breaks, you have to pay this higher price.
Double it. Yeah. Yes.
Now, if you're giving out something like freebies, I guess that's easier than, say, do you ever have to give out something like something boring, like get customers to fill in the questionnaire? Do you have to ever have to promote that, something that isn't as attractive?
Okay, that style is the insurance style.
Oh.
So when you are promoting something as dull as insurance, and you are not allowed to use certain words, like you can't tell them about, you know, the benefits, the costs, and stuff like that.
Right.
Yeah, all you can do is to let them know to speak to the consultant and all, because we're not qualified to give any advice.
Wow.
Zero advice.
Yeah.
It's all compliance and all. So those, we will do it very differently. We usually have like a interesting freebie. Like, for example, during Chinese New Year, we were giving away free calligraphy.
Ah.
So, instead of talking about the insurance plan and stuff like that, I'll tell everyone, you know, free calligraphy. Usually our Master Chen over here, he charges $30 for one artwork. Today, all you have to do is to fill out the form, speak to our consultants to find out what are all the different benefits that you can collect, and you get the beautiful artwork free.
There you go. So even if it's
so
boring,
we make it different,
like
we sell
Christmas,
it differently.
Still give them a freebie, yeah. Yes.
Yeah. So, you know, the way we approach different products, different items has to be very different as well. We have to keep innovating, which makes it very exciting. And we are like a marketeer, a brand consultant, everything all rolled into one.
Is it important to explain to a client whether their targets are achievable when you're doing this kind of work?
I would say that most clients will have targets that they think are unachievable. But when you exceed them, then they would make even higher targets.
Okay.
So usually they'll tell me what their targets are. Then I'll look at the flow of crowd. I'll actually divide by the number of people walking by and how many would I have to, you know, sell in an hour to hit the target.
That's
how I actually roughly calculate.
And you would explain to the clients, you know, that's what's possible, what's likely.
No, I don't tell them what's possible. They tell me what the target is.
Yeah.
I try to exceed it by counting how many per hour I have to sell.
I misunderstood you. They tell you the target, and then you do a quick bit of maths in your head. This many people, I've got to sell this, get rid of this many in an hour, so I've got to sell this many every few minutes or so.
Yeah, that's right. And if every few minutes I'm not hitting that target, then the next few minutes I have to hit more.
Wow, it's not an easy job.
No, but I don't think everybody thinks like me. It's just something that I do so that it's not so boring because I'm saying the same things over and over again.
Yeah, you've got skills.
so that one, I really have to, you know, keep thinking of new innovative ways to say the same thing.
For 8 hours.
for 8 hours it gets very mind-numbing. So I actually, you know, do all these calculations in my head and I'll keep checking on the sales figure.
Oh, that's
just
so
to, you know, make things more exciting for me.
Oh, okay, that's interesting because I do every year. I do stilt walking at the AIA Carnival in Hong Kong.
Ooh.
And I have flexible hours, but I have a target I have to reach after 2 months. So sometimes I might do like 4 or 5 hours of stilts non-stop.
Wow.
Just on stilts for 4 or 5 hours.
That's
and I do the same thing. If I'm there for 4 or 5 hours, one thing I don't do is I never look at my watch because that will only depress me and make the time go slower. I never look at my watch for ages, and I'll play games in my head. Like I'll be looking at the crowd and saying, I wonder how long it will take until I see someone who reminds me of my first girlfriend.
Oh, no.
Stupid little games, and it'll make me interested because I'll be scanning the crowd, looking around. Oh, yeah, that woman looks like the girl I dated when I was 15 years old in England.
Oh, if your wife hears this, she's going to go, Ben, why aren't you thinking of me constantly?
But you do. You do need to have little mental games in your head to to help the time go by. Now, I'm on stilts. I can definitely be seen. But when you're doing these kind of promotions, how do you make sure you can be seen when there's no stage?
That's why I'm in costume.
Yes.
So the moment I'm in costume, it's like they automatically see me.
Yeah. Because you just have to go on YouTube and search for, Vivian Goh or Sweetheart doing promotional work, and the people will see that for an MC doing offstage promotional work, you wear some of the most unusual costumes I've ever seen. It's basically your clown costumes you're wearing.
Yes. I'm very happy that I can at least still be in my clown costumes, even though I can't do the shows because I'm emceeing, right?
Yeah.
And the worst part is that, it's not the worst part, the good part or the worst part. Well, the clients only want me, so I can't substitute other MCs.
Okay. Wow.
So I have to do the job, and it's like they booked me like way in advance, so I miss out on a lot of birthday parties, which are the fun stuff, which I really like.
Yeah, but you've got the booking.
Which is why this year I actually cut down on all the... Yeah.
Tell me, though, the very first time you got this work, did the client say, come in your clown costume? Who decided that you were going to do it in
I actually pitched the idea to them.
There
I told them, hey, this costume is very sweet. It looks very much like your Young Hearts collection.
Ah, there you go.
And from then on,
the legend was born. They carried on booking you because they like you in that costume.
No, because it really makes a difference. Without me, they sell about $7,000 a day. With me, they sell $30,000 a day.
There you go. Brilliant. That's amazing.
It's a huge difference.
It's a huge difference, isn't it? Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's
more
great.
Than 3 times, 7, 14, 21, 28. More than 4 times.
So, yeah, they lose money if they don't hire you. Brilliant.
Yeah. But over the years, everyone has been, like, trying to undercut. Yeah. And finally, last year, somebody actually quoted half my price.
Oh, yes, tough.
Well, of course, the sales figure is different too.
There you go. Yeah, if your quality and you're producing that much increase in sales, then they will be okay paying the higher price for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think a lot of them also don't realize that talking nonstop is not easy.
No, that you've got skills. Like I said, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I think that's the reason why. You know, it's like they kind of like undercut and then later realize that the client is actually quite demanding.
Yes, there you go. They undercut and then they realized, oh man, we're getting asked to do a heck of a lot of work for such a low price. Yes. Oh well, live and learn. Okay, here we go. We're getting on to the random questions as we come towards the close of this podcast. Here's quite a random question. So I'm looking on YouTube at your various shows and videos, and I saw a science show. So what inspired you to create a science show? How did this come about?
I joined a contest.
You joined a contest?
Yeah, by the Science Center is for the Science Busker of the Year Award.
Okay.
And I went in and realized that I'm up against school children with the massive support of their schools.
Right.
Yeah, and then Jimmy and I, Jimmy, Uncle Jimbo, the magician, we went in for the competition together and said, okay, if one of us wins or both of us wins, we'll just divide the prize money, right?
Okay.
Yeah, so I won first prize and he won the Best Entertainer Award.
Wow. Yeah, am I right in saying that basically you took your every single part of your clown show and managed to turn almost every part of it into a demonstration of science?
Not exactly. I actually created a lot of new content for that. Yeah, even though I was using balloons, like I would make a balloon guitar and play a Twinkle Twinkle Little Star on it, for example.
Yes. I should probably get a link on the podcast to this. Out of a balloon, a 260 balloon.
Yeah, and I actually teach the children about a pitch, about sound production.
Yes.
About how sound travels through air. That's why we can hear the different notes. How a tight string would produce a very high note and how a loose string would produce a very low note.
Yes. There you go. That's a good one. That's a really good one. And then you've got the poodle. Is it the poodle's tail of a wooden dog can demonstrate high pressure and low pressure? Would that be true?
Yes.
There you
are. Yes, that's what I was doing too. And I also taught them about wind, about how you can catch wind.
Okay.
Yeah, you catch wind by making a fan out of a balloon. So that's the lollipop balloon that I made.
Oh, there you are. Yeah. Yes.
And then I show them how, you know, we can catch wind. Wind is all around us. We can't see it, but it's there. And I'll prove it. I'll harness the power of the wind and blow your hair up.
Oh, I don't know what you did as well. There's something, I call it a tubular balloon. It's a very long plastic tube, almost similar material to a shopping bag.
Oh, yes.
And you can inflate it really quickly and at the same time demonstrate the Bernoulli effect, can't you?
Yes. That's one of the Bernoulli effect things that I was doing as well. But I found it really difficult to, you know, keep finding all the long plastic bags, the uncut ones.
Yeah.
That's yeah, true. So in the end, I started using the umbrella covers.
Oh, you can do it with an umbrella cover. That's interesting, yeah.
It's smaller, not as visual, but it's easier to find.
What are they called, these balloons? I'm not sure what they're called, but they're about, when they're inflated, they're about 10 feet long, a giant long tube.
Actually, these are just uncut plastic bags.
Uncut.
As in, that's actually what they called it when I bought a row of it.
Oh, there you go. Wow.
Yeah, so you have to find the plastic bag suppliers and then you have to tell them, don't cut my plastic bags.
Oh, you've also got spinning plates, can demonstrate centripetal force. Yeah, loads of stuff.
Centrifugal,
yes, that's right, centrifugal force. That's a good one.
Yeah, so that was fun because I'll you know, show everyone how easy it is to spin a plate. If you spin fast enough, the forces are directed towards the center, keeping it spinning and in the middle.
Vivian, this is brilliant stuff. And this final set of questions, well, it goes back to your decision to branch out from just doing children's entertainment into emceeing. Because I think all entertainers have a choice whether to specialise and do less and less but get really good, or to try or to become a jack of all trades. And I'm a jack of all trades as well. I don't do anything brilliantly, but I can do a lot of things okay or pretty well. Now
you do a lot of things brilliantly.
No. You've also been, by constantly expanding what you do, you've also been like a talent manager, haven't you, running a talent agency?
Oh yeah, that's what I've been doing actually from the very beginning.
Right from the beginning, yeah.
So when I was 17.
Now my question is, occasionally I get asked to hire other entertainers to work for me. But I find it really stressful. Because how on earth do you get other entertainers to turn up on time and to do the job properly? Or do you have to micromanage?
Well, firstly, I only work with professionals.
Yeah.
So professional entertainers, they will be either very early or on time.
Mm.
So if they're unprofessional, I just won't sell them anymore.
Yeah. Okay, got it. Your online database of talents, it's got a long list. It's got MCs, magicians. It's got mingling performers such as jugglers. It's got mingling performers such as a walking table act, which I'm going to ask you about in a minute. You've got mascots, which I wonder how on earth you store so much stuff. You've got activity stations, such as you've done sand art, you've done make your own charms workshops.
Yeah.
your database also includes stage shows like stand-up comedy, magic shows, bubble shows.
We actually have more stuff that I didn't put down because there's like too much stuff.
How about the walking table act? Can you manage to describe that on a podcast without anybody seeing what it is? Can you describe what that is?
Okay, the walking table was actually born because we wanted something unusual at a cocktail situation.
Mm-hmm.
So during like cocktail situations, people always go to the tables and pick up their cocktail nuts or put their you know, get their drinks and stuff.
Yeah.
So I thought, hey, why not have a pretty girl in a table and walk around and, you know, have photos and stuff like that too.
It's basically as if she's standing in the middle of a giant circular tray, basically, isn't it?
Yes. And she's dressed in different costumes. So we have ball gowns, we have batik costumes, we've got like all kinds of different costumes, Supergirl, whatever you can think of, we have it.
How do you store
so
all of this?
So they are dressed to theme.
How do you store all of this? Do you have a massive...
It's in my house. I do a home office. Because I don't like commuting, I don't like traveling, I don't like getting out of my house, so this is actually quite perfect, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I've been doing this all this time anyway, so it doesn't really, you know... Actually, it's great because I'm quite an introverted person, so I can stay at home and not have to meet people, finally.
Amazing, huh? Such an extroverted job, but such an introverted person in real life, huh?
Yeah, so it's like really fun, right?
But what about the mascots? Do you have your own mascots that you store in your house as well?
Yes, I do.
Do you have any room left in your house?
No, I don't. I have a 1,400 square foot apartment that I rented.
Yeah.
For less than the price of a warehouse. So it's really wonderful. I've got a kitchen. I've got a massive living area that I can actually, you know, practice stuff in. And the ceilings here are very high, so I can stack.
You know
so
what?
You can imagine it's all stacked up, right?
I
have one room just for costumes.
Yes. You know what? High ceilings are so good. I've the same thing. I'm sitting in my little office now. And I've got a really high ceiling, and my little room is just packed full of shelves, full of massive amounts of props.
Oh, I think our place is similar.
Probably, yeah. Okay, Vivian, thank you so much for talking to me. Finally, and this is, of course, much more relevant to me than to you, because you started doing this job so young, but how do you deal with, or plan to deal with, getting older?
So, you know, when I was younger, I only did all the clown shows, right?
Yeah.
So when I grew older, I realized I could relate to adults, finally.
Yeah.
I grew up, so I can do MC work. So I foresee as I grow older, I'll probably be doing different types of work.
Yeah, yeah.
But still entertaining and still, you know, making people happy in different ways.
And how young were you again when you started?
17, going on 18.
Wow.
That's when I started a company.
Isn't it amazing?
I started writing poetry at 16, going on 17, and that was when I started performing as well, and that's how I met Roy.
Yep, Roy Thomas Pyamel, Ouch the Clown.
Yes.
Vivian Goat.
Yeah.
Vivian Goat, thank you so much for talking to me. It's always a pleasure to meet up with you. And if anybody's listening and wants to check you out, what's the best place to find you online?
Online, you can come to my website, partywithsweetheart.com, or you can find me at www.zephydom.com, ZEPHYHDOM.com. That's my talent company. Or you can just go and search www.viviengoh.com. viviengoh.com.
Brilliant. And you
I built websites too,
yes,
that's why I've got so many sites.
So many, you do. Vivian, you can find me at thebigbenshow.com.
Oh, nice.
And if anybody's got any tips on surviving the coronavirus, you know, just let me know. Right, I'm going to pick up my harmonica.
Well, patience and lots of love to your family.
Thanks, Vivian.